especially because, I mean, because in a lot of your formative years, I think we went through that phase where everybody in radio dropped their last name and they only had the first name. That was the big thing in the alternative world, too. We went, like, in the mid-90s, all the alternative jocks just had one name.
That's true. Everyone at 94.7, like...
Jane.
Gustav, Greg, yeah. Tara, Jamie.
I grew
Jamie.
Up listening to someone named Oedipus.
Yeah, Oedipus. They just blew him out the other day.
He's been there for,
day,
like, 40
but
years.
But, yeah, just a while back. In Boston?
In the Big Mattress with Charles Anquinera.
The Big Mattress.
That was their morning show.
Was it Oedipus? Was that WCBN or...
WBCN. And then they had...
And then there's, like, in L.A., if you listen to Kerry, there's Jed the Fish.
Oh, I remember listening to Jed the Fish.
So there's, see, there's those guys. They have that. We're talking about this. There was this article in the R&R magazine talking about the most common radio, like the names that people choose or the last names. Yeah, number one was Matthews. Number two was St. John. But that's, but see, St. John, while I've worked with and known a million guys named St. John, you totally, that is from an earlier era. That time is going away. The last St. John I knew was in Fargo. There was the producer of the morning show in Fargo is Nikki. St. John, N-I-K-K-I, Nikki St. John.
Yep, that's well spelled.
Yeah, always. There's also St. James. Sometimes you'll work with a St. James. There's also a lot of O'Briens sometimes. Yep. I once worked at a
Jack
station.
O'Brien.
I actually worked at a station once where there was actually three different radio stations, and I was live on one, and I was voice-tracked on the two others. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I remember everybody who worked there had to have three different last names. Because for some reason, which is stupid when you think about it, because I mean, you're in a small town. There's not that many radio stations there. Clearly, you're the same guy on the oldie station that is on, like, the top 40 station at night. I mean, anybody with half a brain is going to put it together, but they just had to... And you're, I mean, the studios are 2 feet away from one another, and the formats are pretty simple, so they, you know, the odds are pretty similar, so the odds are very, very good that somebody's going to hear. But they have this idea of this fiction that you were two completely separate people. And if anybody asked you if you were the same person, you know, aren't you that same guy that's on the oldie station with a different last name? No. No, I'm supposed to deny it.
That's what they still do at Metro Networks.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There are only like four people who work there, but they cover every single radio station in this town, and they all have different names.
I didn't know that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So if you're working...
That's a trade secret. Yeah, so if you're working... Like when I've worked on the weekends, I'll do like KXL, like a couple other stations, and you just have to come up with different names.
That's interesting. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. So like, it is pretty interesting. So like the person who does Mix 107.5 also might do like Jammin'. And
I'm Channing Tatum. and then another one, I'm Shia LaBeouf.
That's what happened. That's what started this whole conversation,
Chaz,
by the way.
Chaz Palminteri is a disc jockey name in several radio markets, and here's one who's an actor.
What started this entire conversation with, we have the New York Times here that Tim was going through, and what is that movie? It's a movie called...
A Guide to Recognizing Your Saint.
It's some Sundance type film, some art film that's opening in New York. But Tim is looking through, and of course, you know, they have the title for the film, and then they list who's in it, and it's like Diane Wiest and, you know, whoever else. And then it says, and, because they all do, sometimes they'll do the and, or introducing, or with, but it lists all the actors in this film, and the end it says, and Channing Tatum. And Tim actually said, Tim looked at it and said, Channing Tatum, that name makes me sick. Which is a really disproportionate response, I would think.
But I still want to know how old Kitty Carlisle is, because she's been around forever, and she's opening a show in New York. Apparently singing.
Well, and it's sort of an article of faith that not only does everybody shave 30% of their years, but they always choose, as we've noted with Imus, they choose a photo that makes them look a lot younger than they really are.
Randy Newman didn't look at him.
That photo, she looks like she's actually dead, and they've just propped her up for the camera. So God only knows what she really looks like in person. I wonder if she can even stand.
Mm-hmm. I bet she can.
I wonder if just the mere force of gravity snaps her bones.
So she's been around forever. If you watch those old... panel shows on the Game Show Network.
She's what's my line?
Yep, what's my line? I've got to see. But they just took those off recently.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the time. I'm sorry.
We're sitting here reading the newspaper. This is the newspaper. I'm Mayor LaGuardia.
I was just going to say, welcome to tea time. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio.
There we go.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth.
I wonder how long we would have done that.
I don't know. I've only got through like four pages of Arts and Leisure here.
Reading the art section of the New York Times. Hello and welcome to Schmooze for Jews. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, anyway.
God.
Okay, our top story. Paris Hilton has been formally charged with driving under the influence.
Bam!
The L.A. city attorney filed misdemeanor charges today in connection with her arrest earlier this month. The heiress, who was driving her pricey Mercedes McLaren SLR and was pulled over in Hollywood after police spotted her driving erratically, cops administered a field sobriety test and Paris blew a .08 in California driving. With a 0.08 blood alcohol level, that is the minimum level for DUI.
Now, wasn't she talking the other, after this happened? She's like, well, they didn't even charge me. They let me go. I wasn't charged with drunk driving. So was that, is it just that they didn't charge her then? They were waiting?
Well, apparently this, I guess so. The charge carries a maximum jail term of 6 months. However, it is standard practice to give first offenders probation. They cuddle criminals there. As well as a license restriction. Typically, first offenders are also required to attend AA meetings.
I hate her. I hate her.
But how
so
is that
much.
Possible if AA is Alcoholics Anonymous? And if you're anonymous...
I always wonder about that, actually. Sam Kinison used to talk about how he went to an AA meeting that was specifically for celebrities. And he said that the one he went to had, the, like, Ozzy Osbourne went there, and Tommy Lee, I think he said, went there. But it was, he said it was so weird. He walked in, it's like the last 12 months of Rolling Stone sitting right there in the room. And there was that West Wing... There was that story arc in the West Wing where there was an AA meeting that happened inside the White House, and supposedly that is based on a real thing. There is supposedly a real AA meeting, a group that meets in the basement of the White House like once a week or whatever. So,
but Hilton claims she only had one margarita during the evening in question. She says she was driving a little bit too fast because she was starving and was looking for an In-N-Out burger.
Okay. Oh, I should load sound here. All right.
Anyway. Condoleezza Rice is accusing Bill Clinton of making flatly false claims that the Bush administration didn't lift a finger to stop terrorism before the 9/11 attacks. Rice hammered Clinton, who leveled his charges in a contentious weekend interview with Chris Wallace, as we talked about. The notion that someone for 8 months in the Bush administration sat there and didn't do anything is flatly false, said Rice during a wide-ranging meeting with Post editors and reporters. What we did in 8 months was at least as aggressive as what Clinton did. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton stands behind her husband after his little announcement on Fox News Sunday. She says an important report was not given to Clinton during his administration.
If my husband and his national security team had been shown a classified report entitled Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States, he would have taken it more seriously than history suggests it was taken by our current president and his national security team.
Does she sound like a ball buster all the time or what? I mean, she
needs lessons of personality, I believe.
She really does. I mean, do you remember early on in the Clinton years that they had, like, she had the soft hairdo and everything? She had the page boy that kind of came down and curled around, and they had that. What is that thing? Sarah, what is that thing that women have in their hair? It's like a hair band or whatever that kind of goes back, and it's sort of very suburban looking, and it's
a headband.
It's like a head, well, not a headband because that's like what you wear in Flashdance, but it's
that's a headband.
Then what's the thing you wear to keep your sweating?
Sweatband.
Sweatband. What a pleasant word that is. But she just looked. She looked like she was going to be bringing you a plate of cookies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for which I think she actually specifically addressed at one point. Didn't she make that remark? She said, I'm not some woman that sits at home baking cookies, which is,
playing Stand By My Man, which she's doing this time.
That's a little bit of karma and irony coming right back on me. She said, I'm not like some Tammy Wynette standing by my man, which, of course, is exactly what she ended up doing.
And she's doing it now.
But, yeah, they're going to have to get a hold of that woman.
But I will say one thing for her. She speaks in complete sentences, which is more than what we're getting now from the administration.
It's true.
She can read a teleprompter. Several sentences. And make it understandable.
That's
an improvement.
I really wonder about her, though. I
mean, we're never going to see, like, a Reagan again, a great communicator. I don't see anybody else.
Oh, those days are gone. I do wonder about her, and I wonder about whether or not, because you do think that from a political point of view, just from a point of view appealing to the public, whether somebody really just needs to get her under control, just get her in a room and just get her to be nice for a while. But you know, and then I start to think that it doesn't matter because there's a whole section of this country. We're talking about cultural and social groups. So there's like 50% of this country that would never, ever, 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 ever vote for her. I don't care what she did. I don't care if she touched a child on television and healed him. I don't care. If she laid her hands on a crippled baby and suddenly he was made whole, they wouldn't vote for her. So I guess in a way it doesn't really matter. It's just like there's a whole lot of people that would never, ever, ever vote for whoever's going to run for the Republican ticket. I mean, that's the thing about the polarization of this country is I guess you don't really, there are no more undecided, I suppose. So I don't really, I guess maybe this is a good time to be Hillary Clinton because it doesn't matter whether you're bitchy or not.
Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton tells, I guess, some newspaper. Bill Clinton did a great job during his interview on Fox News Sunday.
I think my husband did a great job in demonstrating that Democrats are not going to take these attacks. You know, all you have to do is read the 9/11 Commission to know what he and his administration did to protect Americans and prevent terrorist attacks against our country.
Steely and unlikable, I would say, are the two words that describe her in this interview. She's just got that, which is fine. I mean, and I really do believe, and this is the thing that women complain about a lot that I think is actually justified, that I think that if Hillary Clinton was a man, I mean, you know who really used to say? But I think if Hillary Clinton had a penis, I don't think anybody would have any of these problems with her. She just sound, you know, she reminds me of Donald Rumsfeld sometimes when she talks. Even right there in that last speech, you can hear her actually like hitting the thing when she talks. So if she was the Secretary of Defense or whatever, nobody bat an eye, but he thinks she was fine. It's just because we've been, you know why, too? It's because we've been spoon-fed all these idiotically.
Idiotically.
Well, we've been just spoon-fed all of these moronic first ladies just forever and ever and ever, where they're all like Laura Bush. They talk constantly about how even people who don't like George W. Bush like Laura Bush, which I don't think is true, by the way. I've never really met anybody.
She's kind of a Stepford wife.
I've never met... Yeah, have you ever met anybody like Laura Bush? She seems like a really genuine,
what will she be remembered
person.
As?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, so I just get the feeling that we've just been fed just a long line of really carefully crafted, manicured, imaged first ladies, and that's why a lot of people dislike her, because she just stands out for this. Because, you, like, Nancy Reagan was this way, too. Boy, didn't you get the feeling that Nancy Reagan was just a bitter and unlikable, brittle woman?
She didn't do anything to hide it.
No, that was the
what
other...
What you saw is what you got.
You got the feeling that Reagan was just so whipped with her.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know any... And Reagan, who just seems... And I don't know whether he was a physically big man or not, but in my memory, he seems like a very larger-than-life man physically. Yeah, he was a very big, powerful, imposing, very charismatic presence. But you got the feeling that Reagan was just wrapped around Nancy's finger.
Uh-huh.
And that she could just bang down that metal fist, and he would jump like a dog. So...
And she was a little tiny, you know, stick in a red dress.
With a huge head.
Yeah.
Her head was, I mean, she was like a bobblehead doll,
uh-huh.
Nancy Reagan.
Yeah.
And she had like an H.R. Giger head, where it was all like a queen alien head, where her jaw, like, pointed, was like a foot in front of her, and like the back of her head, that weird eggshell hairdo she had was like way back here. I remember when she got Don Regan fired because he didn't like her fruit salad or something. And so the next day, man, he was out on his ass. So, I don't know. So I guess maybe we are ready for Hillary. Who knows?
Speaking of up-and-coming politicians, what is George Clooney up to? Well, he was tallying around with Governor Schwarzenegger, attending the signing of legislation that blocks California State Pension Fund from investing in companies in Sudan. Now, this is pretty complicated stuff, and people aren't going to remember him for doing this, but he was there and commented on the country of Dufar.
The bill is about holding people responsible for their actions, and as more states begin to adopt it, and they just might, then perhaps we can take a giant step in making sure that a government that systematically eliminates its citizens, at the very least, doesn't profit from it.
Yeah, God bless
get
him.
Get involved with things that people remember.
But, yeah, you're right. Nobody cares about this. I'm not saying...
Stopping people in Africa? No, that's a rock band.
Yeah, I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying they don't. And sadly, George... Well, he spoke at the UN the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I watch a lot of news, and even I can... You know, even I don't really have a full grasp on, you know, on all sections of this world. So, yeah, he's... You know, and that's another one of those, like, Rwanda things that everybody just seems to be like, no, we can't find it on the maps. So we're not going. So,
right. All right. You know, send them some food and some flash waters and what have you, and every week it's a different thing.
Have Jack Black record a song.
Meanwhile, Tony Blair made his final speech before his Labor Party today. During that speech, Blair said, you can't go on forever in a leadership role.
That's why it's right that this is my last conference as leader. And of course, it's hard to let go, but it's also right to let go for the country and for you, the party.
So... Is he resigning early, or is
No. This is the last time he's speaking to his Labor Party.
But
he's
I mean,
had enough of that.
But I know he's washing his hands of the whole thing. So is he, but...
He will resign within a year, he said.
So he's
giving him the pressure to move aside, but it's going to take a year.
Is he resigning or is he just not running again? I'm unclear about whether his term is up. I don't know how the British system of government operates. I don't
Yeah. He's been around for too long.
I don't even,
I mean, ever since Princess Diana got killed, that was years ago.
That country's system of government is so perplexing to me in so many ways because they have these weird no-confidence votes.
And where are these weird wigs from the 1600s? Who can take that seriously?
A lot of shouting and so forth.
People have to answer questions and be accountable.
which
doesn't happen here.
So he's leaving at some point.
Yeah, all right. Next year.
Okay.
Which brings us to wonder, what's Joe Lieberman up to? Well, he met with the, who did he meet with this time?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Oh, he met with the, today's president of Iraq. It explains what he said to him.
You don't need me.
Our support for a free, independent, unified Iraq.
Okay, here's what he sounds like. You know what he sounds like? And it's taken me a while to put my finger on it. It's not just Zoidberg. You know what he sounds like?
Who?
Droopy dog. That's right there. That's what it is. If you had to narrow him to being one of your classic American cartoon characters, mm-hmm. It's Droopy. That's what he sounds like.
Our support for a free, independent, unified Iraq is strong. I also said to him that we're obviously disappointed by a lot that's not happening there and some of the violence that is happening.
I still think he sounds like an old Peter Carlin with a cold.
I could see that too, like if Peter Carlin was really drugged. Let's see here. This is Alan. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, are you planning on having a listener party for Halloween?
Well, Halloween's on what, like a Tuesday? Isn't that the thing?
Not sure.
The Monday, Tuesday, something. I will say this. We're going to be making an announcement, probably. What is today? Today's the 26th. So be listening, I don't know, in the next week or two, there's going to be an announcement of some sort about a thing.
Okay.
Can't say anything beyond that. There will be an announcement about a thing on these airwaves. So you be listening for that. And we'll clarify more as time goes forward.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, but I make a suggestion.
Yes.
It's like, remember how many people showed up at Horns Over the Hawthorn?
Yes, I do.
Like,
sir.
How many of our people you think are going to show up? Just double that number and find a space that could handle all of them.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like an invitation to disaster.
How about the Morrison Bridge?
How about the Rose Garden?
Rose Garden, yeah.
Theater in the clouds.
1,000 people, yeah. No, be listening probably within the next 10 days or so. There's going to be an announcement about a thing.
Okay, have a good one.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. Here's, let's just break here. We'll break, we'll come back. We return around the corner. We got CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard, who will be... No, that's wrong. You know, it's like a 1 in 3, and I'm still getting it wrong. Wait, no. Wait.
Ed McCarthy.
This time was actually 50-50. Got it wrong twice. Ed McCarthy, we come back later on. Lisa Goddard, Dennis Pittsburgh, et cetera. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. It's 503-733-7... the hell is the number? Hello. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. Rick, this is completely true. Rick, Joe Lieberman sounds just like Willie Tanner from ALF. That is so true. Oh, I gotta find... Hold on, I gotta find my Lieberman cuts again. Wait, hold on.
Our support for a free, independent, unified Iraq.
All right, now if you just picture that voice lecturing. You sort of project it into your head and just picture it lecturing Alf about consuming the Achmanek's cat. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome from the South our good friend Ed McCarthy, who joins us now on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, how are you, sir?
How are you, Rick? That is so funny about ALF. I love that.
It's complete. I never... See, Joe Lieberman is an endless source of fascination to us because we're never really able to put our finger on exactly what he sounds like. And somebody speculated he sounded like the character of Dr. Zoidberg from Futurama. I said sort of a kind of a droopy dog kind of a sound. But you know what? Willie Tanner from ALF, that's very, very close. I would say that's almost uncanny, actually. So
that is great. I love that.
Well, we gotta use the Joe Lieberman humor while it's available, because that Joe Mentum will only last so long, and then I will be denied the comedic grist that is that man. So, well, how was your life? Hey, congratulations, by the way, to the Saints who won last night. So.
Well, you know, it's fine if you're a Saints fan.
I thought you were. It claims right here that you are a Saints fan.
No, actually, I live in Atlanta and get some friends on the Falcons. So.
And I thought it says right here on the CNN prep sheet. I thought that somebody was perhaps screwing around with you. I thought that it was maybe like an ironic character quirk that you were pulling for New Orleans. Well, see, but that
you got to give it to them, because the momentum was just absolutely there last night, and that the place was just a fever pitch. So. That was a tough house to come into last night to play.
And, here's the thing about the Saints last night, and I'm not a huge sports fan, but even I know this, is it's sort of like about like the Yankees after 9/11, where there's just there's so much national unity behind that team winning the first game that there's anybody who comes in there is hosed. You know what I mean? There's just no.
I know.
Because if you'd won, if the Falcons had won last night, you would have just looked like jerks. You know what I mean?
It's so true. And that was a tough nut to crack last night, because. You just weren't going to go in there, and these guys and the special teams. I mean, these guys had a game that any team in the NFL is going to wish for to have two quarters back to back like they did. So, but it was great for the fans. It really was, and what I was talking about yesterday. Remember, we were discussing the fact that right next to the Superdome, about 400 yards away, those buildings with all the glass blown out, the places are vacant. And with the $185 million refurbishment of the Superdome, some outlets picked up on that story today, and I was catching that. I mean, that's really something to see down there. It's quite a contrast when you think, it's kind of a way out for them, but it's kind of a stretch, It's just kind of a feel-good thing, and last night really was. But they hope it could be a start. But.
Well, how much of the rest of, of the sections of New Orleans that got destroyed by the hurricane, is it even like 20% that's back to normal? I mean, what percentage of those areas are back to anything remotely approaching what they were beforehand?
No, it probably about maybe, 40%, if you're lucky in certain areas. I mean, some places are just, totally gone. And I was talking to some people today, and they were saying, my place, it's here it is a year later. This woman, she said, look, I just told my daughter, she's here. She says, you got to get out. She says, I need the room. She says, you got to go back to your house.
Right.
Even though your house isn't ready yet, she says, we got to figure this thing out. I mean, it's creating strain amongst families now. It's a tough deal.
Well, I know they had to, and they managed to pull off a Mardi Gras last year, but I mean, that just seems sort of I saw an article the other day. It was like USA Today, I think. They were talking about that they're pushing really hard to try to get the tourist trade back up there, but I mean, it doesn't really seem like that area of the country is even sufficiently recovered to be able to entertain a lot of tourists the way that they would like to. I mean, really, it doesn't seem like they're ready for it, so they got no. So all of the normal things that they would do to spike up their income is that they're not going to be able to do right now.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely, you go into these restaurants and, you got a shortage of waiters and waitresses in some instances. And, about 70% of the restaurants still aren't open yet. And it's tough. I mean, you go into a place and you think, okay, they got the crowds coming in now for this game. And you'll see places are closed. They only run certain hours. I mean, I hate to say it, but, the airport is pretty dysfunctional, too. If there's not a flight coming in, it's almost like part-time work.
Yeah.
We'll get a couple of people on the job when we got planes coming in. But it seems to be a little busier than it was last time when I was here.
Well,
and hopefully they sent my bags to the right place this time, so we'll see what happens.
Dude, don't check anything. The other thing is you got all that electronic equipment, so you're probably screwed regardless. You got to check everything when you get on there.
I've got such little amount of clothes with me. It's all radio gear. Then I get the backup stuff in case the other stuff messes up. I've got to do that. So
I was telling Rube about this, that I lost something at LAX. I was in LA a couple weeks ago, and I lost a package. My own fault. I left a bag. I bought some stuff for the people on the show here, and I left it sitting at the counter. And I went back and it was gone. And so the woman took me down into the bowels of LAX where they have the lost and found. I mean,
oh boy.
No, it's just amazing because if you go to the bottom, if you go to the lost and found, and lost and found departments are fascinating to me anyway. I saw this documentary one time about lost and found departments for the New York City subway system. And it was just the weirdest, just stuff. It was insane. Like they had a whole box. And this is in New York. This is not where I was. But in the New York City subway system, lost and found, they had a whole box that they set aside just for glass eyes that would be turned in. Because there were enough. Seriously. And it wasn't like it was overflowing, but I mean, it was more glass eyes than one would think, strictly speaking, were really likely to be found. They had glass eyes. They had prosthetic limbs. They had bowling balls. They had one skull. They didn't know what they surmised that a medical student had it and had left it behind. I mean, it is like, A, who loses a glass eye? I mean, that seems like a thing you really have to try. And a prosthetic limb, you have to really work to lose that.
Well, that's true. And I mean, far be it for me to use this as a crutch to get a laugh. Because, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, you see that. I actually saw that at a golf course one time. Okay. They had a table outside. It's over in Jekyll Island, Georgia. It's a golf course. They had a table outside, and they had, you know, like golf shirts and golf apparel and everything. And they had a thing marked up sale. And then I looked down the end, and there were like a bunch of prosthetic legs. And apparently, what it was an amputee golf tournament. And I'm not making fun of this, but it just seems so weird to see that see a bunch of artificial limbs on top of a table.
And it was a what golf tournament?
It was a tournament for some handicap folks, and I guess maybe they didn't need their prosthetic. Devices, I guess, when they...
It just seems like you'd notice that was missing. And my other thing is, A, you have to work hard to lose, like, a fake leg. And then, B, why would it be... I mean, why would there be numerous fake legs? It seems like that's a thing you'd go and claim. That's not like when you lose a pair of sunglasses and you can just skip it because you got, like, three more at home. It just made no sense. But I went down into the LAX Lost and Found. Same thing. And it was just the lost and found department at LAX. They only keep stuff, I think, for 48 hours before they move it to a warehouse somewhere. And it was just this endless room filled with huge luggage, bags, boxes, sacks, packages of every size. And you can't imagine. I mean, it's just amazing that they can find anything. So, I'm going to do everything I can to never again let an airport actually have any of my possessions for any length of time.
This is true.
Ed McCarthy. Yes, sir.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with you. After the last episode, with all this stuff and all the radio gear and everything, they sent it from one airline over to another one that was in another concourse. And it was just the most amazing thing. Actually, the airline was nice enough to deliver it to my house that night. They felt good about that because I didn't have to carry it anymore. It was good.
And plus, just a final observation, you always hear about airlines losing your luggage and not losing it like a little bit. It was supposed to go to Atlanta. But it went to whatever. It went to like Gainesville or something. It's always like, well, it was supposed to go to Atlanta, and then we sent it to Mazatlan. You know, we dropped it off in the middle of Peru. You know, so all right, Ed McCarthy.
All the baggage stack.
Enjoy your day, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll
talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Ed McCarthy, ladies and gentlemen, reporting from the South. All right, I love that guy. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Just a moment, we're back to Tim Riley, the AM 970 Ministry of Truth, Rick. I think we ought to have a Let's Blixen drinking game. Also, is that Clyde's voice I hear? See, is that Clyde's voice I hear in the bumper you play at the end of your show sometimes? What does it say? Also, is it Clyde on the Game Geeks commercial? I do not believe so. Thanks for all the entertainment. Love the show. Tim is my favorite. All right, so for the love of God, I'm dropping things everywhere. All right, so in a moment, we'll bring back Tim Riley to the Rick Emerson Show. Here's what's coming up. We got Lisa Goddard, who will be joining us at 1:30. Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here. We've got the Week in Geek coming up as well. Ladies and gentlemen, we rejoin Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, the founder of the company that produces the Girls Gone Wild videos of women appearing in sexual situations pled guilty to charges of failing to document the ages of young girls engaged in sexual acts in his video. As part of the deal, Joe Francis agreed to pay a $500,000 fine. A judge will decide whether to accept or reject the deal at a sentencing hearing scheduled for December 18th. Outside court, Francis told reporters he thought the chances are pretty slim that the judge would reject the deal. We are thrilled to have all this stuff. behind us.
Well, see, the weird thing about that girl's gun, this is like when somebody was talking about the that R. Kelly video, which apparently was legal for everybody to download, because he the thing about that R. Kelly video, we talked to, I think it was actually Ed McCarthy we talked about this, where that R. Kelly video was legal, even though it allegedly had like some 15-year-old girl in it, because he hadn't been found guilty of child endangerment, and so therefore they hadn't proved that the girl was underage, so therefore it wasn't child porn and it was legal to have. But then if he was ever convicted, it would then suddenly become illegal. So that's the thing about the Girls Gone Wild stuff, they're not, that's one of those things that's really weird, because if you own any of the Girls Gone Wild stuff and they failed to accurately document the age, then who knows? I mean, it's entirely possible that you own incredibly illegal material somewhere in your DVD collection. The Girls Gone Wild thing, I just don't even understand the point of that. I don't understand who orders that stuff. Because the only place I've ever seen it advertised is late at night until, like, during, like, Blind Date or something. Blind Date, what is that other show? Wasn't there Blind Date? Wasn't there another show? Eliminate? Yeah. It used to be, like, the Richard Nunn twofer pack. And so you'd watch Blind Date and Eliminate, and they would, you know, and they would have, like, the, see, sluts with no self-esteem, you know, buy now. And it's like, if you have that, presumably you also had a credit card, which means you probably had an internet connection. So just, I never understood why you didn't just skip the middleman and get the porn. Here's Tim Riley.
Steven Tyler said he was diagnosed with hepatitis C 3 years ago after having the illness without any symptoms. He tells Access Hollywood the infection is now non-existent in his bloodstream after 11 months of treatment with the drug infection. I've been pretty quiet about this, he said. I've had hepatitis C for a long time.
I thought that was the thing that, like, you couldn't ever completely eradicate from your blood. I thought it was in your blood forever.
Except if you're Steven Tyler.
unless you're Steven Tyler, in which case you have superpowers. In which case you are endowed with a golden immune system.
I have a just-added Hick Watch here.
Fantastic.
A breaking Hick Watch.
Here's your breaking Hick Watch for Tuesday.
Copenhagen makes me feel good. Slobbering all around the house. Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
A Wyrefield, Virginia farm worker is accused of losing his temper and attacking a woman with a tractor. This fellow's name is Jeffrey Turpin. He lives on Crockett Farm. He's been convicted over the years of public swearing and cursing and abusing others. Authorities allege the hot-headed Turpin chased this woman named Babos across his farm with a John Deere tractor after aborted negotiations over a $500 truck.
How? I don't understand how you could be chased with a tractor. Tractors don't, I mean, just run sideways.
Apparently, Robin Babos hobbled into court on crutches, her left leg in a splint. This fellow who accompanied Babos, his cousin to the farm, to inspect the $500 truck, which she already put $200 down on at the farm, Turpin told the two to test drive the truck around the farm several hundred acres. Well, when they returned 30 to 35 minutes later, Turpin drove up in his tractor in a fury. He really got agitated and started cussing.
Drove up in his tractor in a fury.
He accused us of drinking his beer and smoking his cigarettes. With Lady Babo still in the truck.
Lady Babos. That Lady Babo sounds... I don't even know what that sounds like. Lady
like
Babo.
Like a Star Wars character.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Well, Turpin used the hydraulic-powered bucket on the front of his tractor to lift up the front of the truck about 3 feet and dropped it. Babos jumped out of the truck, and Turpin used the tractor to push it up a hill.
That's Lady
Babos. It rolled back down through a fence and onto a barn. A furious Turpin then chased Babos and her accomplice up the hill, revving the tractor's engine and threatening to bury them if they didn't leave.
This is like a Holly Hornbeak story.
When Babos fell down, Turpin dropped the 350-pound iron bucket to the ground and rolled the bucket over her, breaking her leg.
Okay. Well, there you go. So don't screw with the tractor guy, I guess. Is that the end?
It doesn't. I guess the deal for the $500 pickup truck is on after this.
Genius. There you go. That doesn't include the duct tape. Lady Babos.
Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little shoe in my house. Go spinning the around the house. Copenhagen makes me feel so
a teddy bear has been implicated in the death of 2,500 trout. New Hampshire Fish and Game officials say a teddy bear dropped into a pool at the Fish and Game hatchery, clogged the drain, the clog blocked the flow of oxygen, and suffocated the fish. It was a Paddington bear dressed in the yellow raincoat and hat. It's believed to be the first stuffed bear to cause injuries at the facility.
A Paddington bear.
The death prompted the Fish and Game to release a written warning saying, release any teddy bears into the fish hatchery and be arrested.
Okay. We got this. Somebody sent me this. This is a attention producers and hosts. This is some casting call. Your listeners have the chance to star in a new reality show. Who is this from? From somebody, blah, 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 the PR group. A city-by-city search is now underway to find 8 lucky cast members aged 35 to 65 to start an amazing new reality television program called Fountain of Youth. The show premise is over 13 weeks. Specialists will radically... This is so hideous. Will radically transform the appearance of cast members, making them look an average of 30 years younger without surgery. 60-year-old Grant... Imagine if this was someone you knew. 60-year-old granddads will be transformed into rugged hunks. 40-year-old housewives will be transformed to look like their college-aged daughters. Age reversal expert and show producer, blah, 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 of Suddenly Younger will explain the show audition process, blah, blah, blah. She will answer questions about cosmetic age reversal, including the fastest way to trim up those pudgy baby boomer bodies. How did... This is the second thing. I'm just reading this off the sheet, by the way. This is the second thing that Ms. Ray will be answering. How to train sagging breasts back up into place. I don't understand exactly how one trains a sagging breast.
Very patiently.
Okay, so there you go. I'm not going to read any more here. I don't want to know any more about the... Yes, how do you train that 45-year-old bust line? All right, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, this is rather bizarre. It's from Florida, too.
I wasn't prepared. I didn't know. No one told me there'd be Florida stories today.
Two women who were doused by gasoline from a jealous boyfriend were saved when the man's lighter failed to spark a flame as he tried to set them on fire. William Sheridan got into an argument with his ex-girlfriend's roommate behind his mobile home. Sheridan then allegedly forced himself into the trailer where his ex-girlfriend was staying, picked up a gas can, and began to cover the mobile home with gasoline. He also splashed the woman and a pet cocker spaniel. The gentleman picked up the... picked up the gas can and splashed some of the liquid on the roommate and her dog. The woman tried calling 911, but Sheridan grabbed the device and smashed it. Sheridan then grabbed his lighter, tried to spark a fire, but it didn't work. He tried several times. He was battering her, pushing and shoving her, and trying to light the lighter... it was hand-to-hand combat.
Good God.
The women were able to break free, and Sheridan took off. Officers captured Sheridan. A short time later, he was charged with attempted murder, arson to an occupied residence, domestic violence, aggravated assault and battery, felony animal cruelty, and hindering the victim's call to 911. The motive is love and infatuation.
Of course. As it often is when you're lighting someone on fire. Nothing really says love like setting one ablaze with a match and some kerosene. Is it hot in here? Am I the only one who feels like it's hot?
It's kind of cool in here, isn't it?
Really?
Tropical breeze in my door.
Right. We had this same conversation yesterday. Well, are you okay?
Are you okay? Why is it always me? No, it just, maybe it's a thing. I don't know. It feels very warm and humid in here to me. I think it's not so much the heat as it is the humidity. I feel like the air is not circulating in here. Maybe it's not the temperature much as it is. It's just that same like bad air that we've been breathing. It really does beg the question exactly how many days we can exist in here before all the oxygen is actually removed from the air. Here's Tim.
Well, somebody set fire to a toilet paper dispenser in the men's room of a Medford theater, and the manager thinks he knows why. It was not a coincidence that this weekend we were showing Jackass 2, said Tinseltown Theater Manager Ray Ray. Oh, Steve Ray.
Ray Ray.
Steve Ray Ray. He said Tinseltown had problems all weekend with teens trying to get into the R-rated Jackass number 2, and he suspects someone denied entry set fire to the toilet paper. The fire touched off sprinklers, which damaged the restroom and corridor. About 500 people evacuated the theater, which reopened yesterday afternoon after cleanup. Theaters across the country... reported increase of vandalism when the first Jackass movie came out in 2002. The movie star Johnny Knoxville and cohorts doing zany stunts. And the box office in its opening weekend pulled in 20.
I really do feel like less of an American, by the way, because I never saw Jackass the movie. I do feel like that is part of the American cultural experience that I have missed out on. I kind of watched the show, but I never did see. And it wasn't like I consciously avoided the film. I just for whatever reason it came and went to the theater and I never saw it. And on the second, goddamn, and the second one is out too, and I haven't. The problem with that second Jackass film is that I don't. It's like that ear-cutting scene in Reservoir Dogs, you know, where I kind of knew about it going in. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Reservoir Dogs the first time, and someone had told me, they're like, you know, the entire time you're going through the film, there's going to be this one sequence in the movie that there's going to be this one moment that is just going to scar you for the rest of your life, and you'll never get over it. So just be. And what did the guy tell me? He said, so when the guy turns on the radio and there's the spinning wheel song or whatever, is it Steeler's Wheel? Is that what it is? It's like when there's the Steeler's Wheel song, that's when that sequence is coming, just so you know. And so that's the worst part, too, in a film like that, where you know something horrible is coming because you've been told about it by somebody else, and so you're just sitting there, like, all cinched up, just waiting for the entire time, just waiting for the ugliness to come down. That's almost why I can never see Jackass 2. And I will not elaborate on what and if you've seen the movie, you already know what I'm talking about, because I was talking to Brad, the car guy, this weekend, who saw it. All I know about Jackass 2 is this scene with a horse. And, you know, it was sufficiently described to me that I think I probably just can't see the rest of the film. I can probably just never see it. Because, especially, I mean, like, if it's one thing, it's on DVD. But DVD, as soon as they show the stable, I can just hit the skip button and I can move right on to the next scene. If I see it in the theater, I'm going to have to do one of two things. I'm going to have to just sit there and grit my teeth all the way through it. Or B, I'm going to get up and leave the theater during that moment. And then you just look like a sissy. So I don't believe I can do either of those things. I believe I'm off to eschew is seeing Jackass 2 at this point in time. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for Penis Watch.
Here's your Penis Watch.
Take
for Tuesday.
The Rick Emerson
Show.
Penis. And my troubles start a melting away.
Bow, bow, bow.
I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
Now this comes to us from Eastern Malaysia. I'm not sure if this is the person's name of the town, but it says... Kota Kinabula.
Excellent.
Now, I'm not sure if that's the person involved or the municipality. But I don't speak East Malaysian fluently. The 26-year-old bachelor who cut off his penis with a knife on Friday had it reattached at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital after a 4-hour emergency procedure, the first successful case in Sabah. The emotional and unstable man, who had recently been released from prison, did not wish to have the organ reattached and even asked it be thrown away.
Yeah, he was just sort of done with it.
Mm-hmm. But he was rushed to a hospital by family members who managed to retrieve the severed organ.
You know, the medical science really has marched a long way. I mean, I remember, like, when I was a kid, I went to school with a kid who got his the tip of one of his fingers. There's a guy running a motorcycle out front. He somehow got his finger caught in the chain, and then the tip of his finger came off. And they could never put that back on. Today, I mean, this is only like a scant 15 years later, and there's men cutting their penises off at a record rate. I mean, really, I would say... What do you say in this program? We average probably 3 of these a month.
I would say so.
Over the course of a typical month, I would say we got 2 to 3 guys who are having their manhood removed with some sort of sharp implement. And I mean, it's just, it really is amazing. The medical science, A, it's amazing the medical science has had to learn how to do this because there is such an epidemic of it. And B, that it's like, really, they couldn't even figure out how to have a microwave in which you could put tinfoil a couple years ago, and now you're able to put on reattach a guy's penis just like that. I mean, in Malaysia, of all places.
Yeah. Let's see here. A team of doctors carried out the surgery, and it took about 6 hours. The man's condition is reported to be stable. However, he's under 72 hours observation for any complications. It will take at least 6 months for the organ to regain sensation and its full function. The man is now calmer under medication and did not seem to mind the surgery.
Okay. One bit. There you go. There's your penis watch for Tuesday.
Enormous penis.
One more here and then we'll take a break.
Troubles start a melting away.
Bow, bow, bow.
I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
Well, this isn't as amazing as an amputated penis. It's a run-of-the-mill amputated finger, but it'll have to do. A 16-year-old boy accidentally shot himself inside his home while playing with a sawn-off shotgun. The boy's left hand, apparently, was over the muzzle when the gun discharged, partially amputating his middle finger at the palm. Officers recovered the shotgun, which had been thrown a short distance from the residence in the 2000 block of Santa Rita Street, and discovered it had been below lawful size. Somebody cut this gun.
That's hard to believe.
The boy was flown to a medical center for surgery. According to police, he was extremely uncooperative, refusing to provide details on where he got the gun. According to police, a complaint will be sought for possession of handgun.
Where was this at?
Salinas, California.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I wouldn't know where to get a sawed off shotgun. I wouldn't know how to saw one. I wouldn't know with what to saw it off. It's a strange world we live in. All right. Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back. Around the corner, we got the Lisa Goddard coming up later on. The Week in Geek. Dennis Pitzenberger is going to be here as well. Don't forget, like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.